Welcome to the Island Basketball Podcast, the Pick Control Podcast with your host, Zach Harper. Dan Wyke, the remix to Ignition. I wish I could sing it for you. How's it going?
Oh, man. It's good, I guess.
You sound tired.
Yeah, it's been a long couple days. It's one of these things, like, you just don't prepare for this. There's no way that you ever think, oh, you know, you cover the Clippers and you're going to be part of a national firestorm for 5 days. You know, like, it just isn't something that ever crosses your mind. And this story was so big. And, you know, we were joking before the taping about kind of just all the media requests and stuff that that people were sending me. And, like, I don't know, man. I needed a secretary.
Look at you with the humble brag.
I know. Seriously. No, there's no humble about it on this one. No, it was the weirdest request that I got over this was, and I was very selective about the stuff that I did, you know, with the exception of this podcast.
Right, clearly.
The weirdest one I got was Glenn Beck has some show still on TV somewhere.
Oh, that seems unnecessary in 2014.
Yeah, right. And they wanted to send me to a studio today for a half an hour to talk about this with Glenn Beck.
Oh, that you should have done.
No, I passed. I was really no good to come out of this for me. So, yeah, it's just been like, it's been nuts. And it's funny because I think beat writers will tell you this, that when you're on the road with teams and stuff over the course of a year, you can kind of use, like, your kind of energy level as a gauge for where they're at.
Right.
The players, you know, it's magnified for sure. I remember earlier this year, and you might remember this game, when the Clippers were on national TV in Brooklyn. I think it was a TNT game, and they got waxed.
Yeah.
And maybe one of their worst losses of the year. And that day, like, you know, I remember I got out of the cab in New York in the afternoon. It was a back-to-back after the Doc Rivers get back in Boston, a really emotional game. And it was like being in New York had this like burst of energy, right? You know, it was a nice day. All these people are out. You go get a fancy lunch. And then, like, we're walking in the press room at Barclays and being like, I'm done. Send me home. I don't want to be here anymore. And, like, it was like someone hit me across the face with, like, a folding chair. And then, like, you know, sure enough, the Clippers go out and play like that. I'm, like, I don't want to say sick of talking about this because it's important, but you're just so swamped that, and I'm me.
Right. You're trying to deal with all this.
Yeah, I'm not Chris Paul. I'm not Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, any of these guys, you know, like, and this wasn't my owner, you know, and the guy who runs my team. So that's the thing that sticks out to me about all of this is just how much one of the things I'll take away from this, and not to make excuses for him, but how much the Clipper players, like, you just saw it, like, this wear on them, and it was crazy.
Yeah, I don't know how it could not wear on them, just to the simple fact that, like, yes, people are aware of Donald Sterling's past transgressions before this incident, but mm-hmm. it's something that you kind of just like, oh, well, I've got a job to do. I want to play here. I want to play with these guys. I want to play for this coach. Like, I'm just going to put that out of my mind. Like, you kind of just, like, ignore it, right? It's not like you're not cognizant of it. You just kind of, like, pretend it's not there. And then,
yeah, I think that's the perfect way of putting it.
Yeah, and then when it gets brought to the forefront in such a, you know, incendiary matter, it's just like, there's no avoiding it, and it becomes a suffocating thing. Like, yesterday, or over the last 3 days, really, but I kind of had Monday off because I was traveling, but yesterday, like, I felt like I could never catch up. Like, I was just like, we need this Donald Sterling story, we need this story, we need this Adam Silver story, we need this story, we need this story, and, like, I'm just, like, jamming away, and I felt like I was just writing the same thing over and over for all these different posts, and to me, it was exhausting. If I had to go play basketball, hell, if I had to build an IKEA dresser last night, I would have just jumped off the roof of my building. But to go play,
it goes without saying, that's right? That's an infuriating process.
It's an awful process. I don't understand the Allen Ranch. The Allen Ranch, it just doesn't make any sense.
Allen Ranch. It sounds like a 50s cowboy. Anyways.
But, the idea of then you have to go play a pressure-packed Game 5, like, whether it's on your home floor or not, Once the decision to ban Donald Sterling came down and the organization could finally breathe like a sigh of relief, as Doc Rivers put it, it just seemed like you expected them to come out and win that game because like, oh, now you can feel free and all that stuff. But you still have to get over the emotions to do that, right? Like you can ride the emotions, but there's still all those like morale destroying emotions that are still with you, even if that cloud of Donald Sterling is leaving.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't go away, you know, I mean, and it's going to still be there when they play in, you know, Golden State on Thursday night. It's still going to be there. And, you know, this was something that, and I think the thing that kind of bothered the players the most, and it wasn't so much the comments themselves. You know, I think that in a vacuum, if it was just the comments, they could have just dealt with it, and you know, it would have been difficult to figure out the right thing to do, but they would have dealt with it. And but the way that it'll be, I mean, because it was so public, and everybody had, I mean, it's race. Everybody has an opinion about race.
Right.
Generally, that racism is wrong. It's usually the opinion. But like in this case, it was something that, you know, should they play? Should they not play? Was there, you know, I thought the way they handled it pregame was cool. I was there and I was like, wow, that's pretty powerful.
Yeah.
And I tweet about it, and all of a sudden people are telling me they're punks for doing that. That's not good enough. You know, they're getting compared to slaves on Twitter. You know, Chris Paul's face is being put on, you know, being photoshopped into the 12 years of Clipper jokes and stuff. And it's like that's heavy.
That is very heavy.
If you're a player in that circumstance, and Doc, I think, you know, really, without getting too, you know, like crazy here about Doc, handled this so well.
Yeah, he really did.
And the way that he kind of put himself out in front as sort of the sacrificial lamb and said, I'm going to wear it. I'm just going to take the brunt of this. I'm going to be the voice, and I'm going to answer every question. And, you know, my players don't have to. I mean, you could see it by last night. That he was beaten down. He looked older. He looked tired. He sounded tired. Really just a worse version of how I'm feeling. it was like you could tell. But I think the one thing he said was that, to cut to the chase for the players, this was about, they all wanted to do the right thing. They all wanted to make the right statement.
Right.
But it's impossible to fully commit to that when you have no idea what the right thing to do is and what the right statement is, because you're not prepared for it. And they weren't prepared for this.
Yeah, there's no way to prepare for that. And even then, like, you still have to, and especially like before Adam Silver's decision was announced, like, you have to wait out like what that decision is. Like, if you don't know what the consequences are, you know, you can decide, hey, this is what we're going to do if this happens. This is what we're going to do if this happens. But if you don't know like what you're truly facing, like, that's all just kind of just like conjecture and just talk, and like you're not fully committed to it emotionally. Like, it's you're working yourself up into it, but there's still this huge emotional burden of, like, once the decision's made, everything becomes real. Not that it wasn't real before that point, but it becomes even more real.
Yeah, the word that Doc Rivers uses to describe these types of things is clutter.
Right.
And this is, like, the ultimate. I mean, this, like, generally I feel like clutter is sort of like, you know, a messy apartment, right?
Right.
For your more affluent listeners, a messy home.
Yeah, both of those affluent listeners will get that reference now.
Affluent is rich people. Okay, I mean, let me dumb this down a little bit. this was like, you know, this was like one of the houses in Hoarders in terms of clutter.
Yeah.
That's what this was. I mean, this was intense. I mean, you're getting pulled in so many different directions. Again, I can just, you know, they're not talking a ton about it yet. Like, they started to open up a little bit after last night's game. But, like, you know, I can just gauge based on, you know, kind of my experience through this. And that was that, you know, every 20 minutes getting a text from somebody else asking you, what do you think about it? What should we do? You know, what should they do? You know, the pressure from, you know, the people you work for saying, make sure you've got to do a good job. Everybody's watching on this. You know, stuff like that. It was pretty much nonstop, you know, since Friday night. You wake up and you've got, you know, 10 text messages, which is a lot for me. And, like, you know, you wake up to, you know, 50 emails, and you wake up to all of this stuff about it, and there's just no downtime. It doesn't allow, like, there are no mental breaks when you're dealing with something like this. And I applaud the team for how they handled it. I think they handled it as best as they could. I don't know that it was, you know, some people still say, like, I think it's easy to say if you're, like, Chauncey Billups. I think it's easy for Chauncey Billups to go on, you know, national radio and say they shouldn't have played or he wouldn't have played.
Right.
I feel like that's an impossible decision. That you're going to get, like, if you're going to lose, if you're going to give up a loss in the playoffs, like, that's not, you know, Donald Sterling wasn't there when, you know, Blake Griffin, and I wrote this or tried to convey this and something. You know, he wasn't there when Blake Griffin was, you know, a little kid getting pushed around by his older brother, you know, playing basketball and trying to get better.
Right.
You know, Blake wasn't thinking about Donald Sterling. Like, he isn't doing this for him. Like, yeah, he's the owner of the team, but so it's not like they're winning a title for Donald Sterling. It's not like their game is like, we're going to get this one for the Don. Like, that doesn't happen. You know, this was about them, and I don't know. There's, like, just an element of, like, I think walking away from it would have been, like, kind of saying, hey, look, your opinion's affected us. And, you know, I think playing was the right thing to do.
Oh, I completely agree. I was trying to convey this on the radio maybe yesterday or the day before of saying, you know, this is a situation where the players can go out and play, and it's not them generating money for Donald Sterling. It's not them supporting Donald Sterling in any way. It's simply them doing their job. And it's simply them, yeah, you know, doing what's right for them and what they want. And what they want is to win a title. And ideally, in a situation like that, like, you would persevere through it all. You would win a championship that playoff series, you know, that playoff season, and he wouldn't be allowed to accept the trophy, right? Like, if anything, wouldn't that be the ultimate reward, to persevere through it, not let his, you know, his BS and his cloud of just complete crap that has been over this organization for 30 plus years, not let that affect them and kind of rise above it. And, like, if anything, that seemed like the best decision to me. Now, if they decided, hey, we're not going to play for this guy, like, we're not going out there, I also understand that. But I thought the decision to play was the right one. And yeah, I actually think that kind of what you were speaking to earlier, you know, it's easy to say, oh, this will happen, you know, we're going to do this. I thought it was interesting that the Warriors kind of have a situation like that. Like, who knows if the Warriors would have actually let the jump ball go up and then walked away, right? Like, it's easy to say, and I'm not calling them liars, but it's something where it's a lot easier to say you would have done that when you don't have to do that.
Yeah, two things. So, first, I imagine you on the radio saying all of those things, and then the DJ saying, and what song do you want to request?
Clearly, it's Gangster's Paradise by Coolio.
It'd just be like, yeah. I like the idea of that, too. But then, I mean, here, basically, Roger Mason Jr. told a bunch of reporters that this wasn't just going to be the Warriors. It just wasn't going to be the Clippers. Everybody last night was going to walk off the court.
Yeah.
If the decision wasn't satisfactory. Now, again, he said this after the decision was satisfactory.
Right.
So, but I think, you know, had everybody walked off the court, the league would have been in position. I don't think they would have had to reschedule games. It would essentially result in postponements. And would be my guess. I don't know how both teams can take a double forfeit. Would be weird. So I would
usually have to pay double for that.
I know. And then, like, so I think that's, I mean, that was my understanding. That was the plan. Now, Doc Rivers kind of said, no, that really wasn't the plan. But who knows what he knew. What he knew on this, you know, and this was happening on very, you know, there was a lot happening with this. There was elements of, you know, Adam Silver really kind of, I think the players, like, being like, okay, this is your first test. We want to know if you're going to be our guy or not. There was elements of that. You could hear it in the way Kevin Johnson spoke, you know, on behalf of the union, And I think, you know, from a player standpoint, they were thrilled with the decision. This is what they wanted. I don't know that they would have accepted anything less, to be 100% honest, that, you know, they wanted Donald Sterling gone. They wanted it to happen as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And that's what Adam Silver vowed.
And it is a thing, like, this is kind of the topic today, and Ethan and I talked about this yesterday on the podcast a little bit of, I do wonder what kind of camaraderie or what kind of bond has been created between Silver, you know, the new guy on the job, and the players, and how long that lasts, if that lasts into, you know, player negotiation or, you know, the collective bargaining agreement, if that lasts beyond that. You know, it's an interesting dynamic that, you know, we have this kind of closeness between the two sides that I don't know that we've had in, you know, 20 years.
Yeah, well, someone asked J.J. Redick about it, and he said, well, those negotiations get pretty good.
Right. About this. Right, that's why it's hard to wonder, like, how real that is.
It's a long ways away, you know, from now. I mean, look, Adam Silver's going to do something the players don't like. It's part of his job. You know, he's going to do stuff the owners don't like. Also part of his job. I think, though, the idea that he's kind of everybody's commissioner, whereas, you know, Davidson was always viewed as sort of more of an owner's commissioner, I think that at least in the short term there's goodwill right now. In fact, I know there is, and you know, that was one of the things. Kind of, you wondered if it was like lip service, the way that when this first started, everybody expressed like supreme confidence in Adam Silver. You know, I know you were traveling or whatever, and not paying any attention. But that was one of the things that I everybody was like, we're going to let Adam Silver handle this, and I know he's going to do a good job.
Yeah.
And, you know, and at the time, I didn't think much of it. I was like, okay, yeah, of course, what are you going to say? You know, we're going to let Adam Silver do this, and he's going to just disappoint the hell out of us. I don't think anybody was ever going to say that. But, you know, there was just, you can tell in the way that people talk about him, like, J.J. Redick called him Adam yesterday, which I thought was weird, because I don't remember anybody, a player, in my mind, I don't remember a player referring to David Stern as David.
Yeah, I don't remember that. Maybe Jordan did, but I can't think of anybody outside of that.
You know, like, and it was like just the way that he's like, Adam was, you know, was terrific yesterday. And I just think that it was, the players I know needed to hear it. You know, even though they didn't watch it as a team, you know, Doc relayed the message to him in film. After it happened, they were practicing when it happened, and you know, he said that there wasn't like a big cheer or anything like that. Nobody came across him doing that Chappelle robot dance or anything like that. It was.
I imagine if Ryan Hollins had done that, he would have fallen down.
Oh, it was so good. But it was just like silence, you know. And I think it was like a little bit of a sigh of relief, and then they got back to work.
Yeah.
But it was just, there was a lot of confidence in Adam Silver on this, and. You know, I think the way that things have happened since then, it's like, oh, hey, great. Now, during all this, I get to read the NBA Constitution.
Right.
You know, it's like all of this stuff that, you know, in terms of transparency that you thought at the time was kind of, you know, whatever. Everybody says they want to be transparent. No one ever is like, we're going to be the most secretive organization we've ever been around.
You're not going to know anything that's going on. We're not even going to post scores anymore.
No, right? You can play. There was a game. But there's nothing like he's followed through on that stuff. And I think that has given everybody even more confidence in him.
Yeah. And even
he's a winner. He comes out of this a winner.
He's a closer. He's a closer for sure.
Which closer?
The
Jerry Sedgwick?
Yeah.
Or Trevor Austin.
I was gonna go Mo Rivera, but
okay, yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah, he's all right. I think my power rankings of the kind of closer that Adam Silver is would definitely be Mo Rivera, Kier Sedgwick, and then Trevor Hoffman,
and then Rich Goose Gossage.
Maybe Goose, maybe Lee Smith. I don't know. I haven't decided yet. I've only gotten the top three.
Lee Smith was like a bad dude. Like he was like. Everybody always talks about the stories about how intimidating he was and like how giant he was. A big guy. Anyway, sorry.
He was a big guy. We definitely know that he wasn't. He, John Rocker is not on that power rankings.
At talk closers.
I think that the cool thing about this is that it wasn't just a decision for the players. And I love that, you know, Adam Silver at one point said, I'm doing this as a person. Like, not as, you know, I think he said, like, I'm not doing this as a commissioner, I'm doing this as a person. Or something to that effect. And if anything, like, yes, it was very important. Like, it was important for the players above all that this was the decision, this is the avenue they're going. But it really was just important for the sport and for the fans, like, to know that, hey, this, like, whether you like David Stern or not before, you know, we're taking care of this. Like, we're going to make sure this league is going in the right direction. And people didn't always feel that way with Stern, either correctly or incorrectly. But at least with Silver so far, his first major test, he gave some confidence and some trust into the people, where it's like, look, I'm going to take care of this league. And so, you know, coaches, players, owners, fans, pundits, all those people can now, like, look at it. And it doesn't mean he's going to be perfect from now on, but it's you can look at it and say, if something comes up, we trust that he's acting in the best interest, regardless of whether or not we agree with it.
Yeah, and I mean, like, this is the guy to most NBA fans who would kind of stumble his way through, you know, foreign pronunciations during the second round of the NBA draft.
Right.
You know what I mean? And like, looks like a meek guy, like, you know, and he was super forceful.
Yeah.
Yesterday, and one of the things that struck me, I was trying to watch as much of the press conference as I could on my phone. I was at City Hall in Los Angeles waiting for the NBAPA press conference. But one of the things that struck me when I went back and read the transcript was how direct his answers were.
Yeah.
And like, he didn't kind of sidetrack into talk of closers or anything like that. It was very on point. And it was, you know, the answers were short, in some cases shorter than the questions. And I think that he had a point he wanted to get across, and he made it, and he got to it. And when he was asked questions, he was very forceful in his responses. And I think that, you know, it was something that players, you know, I keep going back to the players because I feel like while this was an issue for everybody, I really felt like it affected the players the most.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
In terms of psychologically. And I think that was what they needed to hear, was they needed to know that, like you said, that there was somebody who was going to take care of this. And when something like this happens, that it's not going to linger for a long time. And I think that was kind of the answer, and the resolution that they got was that it was quick and decisive, you know, and that was the important thing.
It is a little disappointing that when talking about the process of getting the Board of Governors together to discuss things, he didn't break into a rant about why this is 40 maybe isn't as bad as people think.
It is a super... So did you recently watch this?
It's actually on right now. I've seen it before, but it's just on muted right now.
No, you're 100% right. See, the issue with this is 40, in my mind. And thank you for bringing this up, because I've been just so desperate to talk about something else. I've, like, just been going up to people that I don't know and being like, hey, I just bought Rush on DVD. You see it? Any thoughts? Talk about Rush. No. And then they talk about Tom Sawyer, and it's a whole problem.
Right.
The This Is 40 is like a lot of the recent Apatow movies, in my mind. Like, there was a time when I thought Judd Apatow was going to be, like, the great American filmmaker of like, sort of my, like, adulthood.
Right.
Following 40-Year-Old Virgin and Knocked Up, it was, like, especially Knocked Up, particularly, a movie that I think is so good.
Oh, it's excellent.
And like, just the way that it kind of navigates between comedy and, like, you know, real-life dramas and stuff, it's a great balance. But then, like, you know, Funny People comes out. I really like Funny People, too, but it's probably 35 minutes too long.
I love my like, one of my favorite movies is the first hour of Funny People.
Yeah.
Like, the first hour of it is great, and, like, then the turn it takes, like, I don't love it. I don't really like it, but I get it. But then, like, there is that extra, like, my God, you could shave 40 minutes off this movie and I wouldn't be mad. And it doesn't even matter which 40. Like, take something out of it.
And I feel like This Is 40 had elements of that, too. Was that it was just, there was just a little much.
Yeah, he had a lot to say about the subject and maybe too much to say.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting about Apatow movies. Like, I don't know where he goes next or what he's doing. He's a guy, I mean, like, seriously, when his name is on something, like, it grabs my attention. Like, you know, whether it's Girls on HBO, whether it's, you know, a Rogan movie like, you know, Superbad or something, if he's just a producer for Eating Sarah Marshall. I love that movie, too. You know, just kind of his, like, that kind of stable of comedians and comic minds is so interesting, and they have so much to say. I just wish he was a little more focused. Also, if you're an Apatow fan, have you seen Freaks and Geeks?
Oh, God, yeah.
Okay, yeah. People who haven't seen that are really missing something fun.
I agree, and I think I think you need to go into it just like, because I've recommended it to people and they're like, oh, it was too hyped up for me, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you just have to go into it and just accept it for what it is. Like, don't, it's hard to go into things without expectations, but just go in and enjoy it for what it is.
It's not The Wire.
Right.
Like, it's not going to be, it is, gonna sit,
I mean,
there and be like,
for those that haven't seen,
so much about 1980 Detroit.
Right. For those that haven't seen Freaks and Geeks, it is basically the same plot point as The Wire, but it's not The Wire.
Yeah. It's like Suburban Wire. But with James Franco being dreamy, and
he is dreamy.
Seth Rogen.
He's dreamy. And Seth Rogen. Who's his dad? Or who's his, not his dad? Who's his brother in real life? It's like Dan Franco or something like that.
Dave Franco.
Dave Franco. That guy is surprisingly charming.
Yeah, he's really good in 21 Jump Street.
Yeah, he's excellent in that movie.
My expectations for 21 Jump Street were so low.
Oh, so low. I love it. I'll watch it anytime it's on.
Yeah, and it was funny. I went through, went through a Channing Tatum phase. but he's, speaking of people who are surprisingly charming. And like, there's something there.
Yeah, there is something, and I hated him for a very long time, and I don't know what it was, and it wasn't like he's good looking or anything. Like, I just thought his acting sucked. I didn't think there was any personality. But in the last, like, 3 years, I'm in a Channing Tatum renaissance.
I know. There's going to be, like, 10 years from now when he's, like, starring in some super crazy, like, True Detective version, and, like, he's going to go through this McConaughey phase.
Yeah.
Just watch. He's going to be way more muscular.
By the way, I can tell you where Judd Apatow is going. There's a movie. He's directing a movie called Trainwreck that is written by Amy Schumer, and it stars John Cena, Tilda Swinton, Brie Larson, Bill Hader's in there.
John Cena.
He's the first billing on this IMDb page.
Speaking of Channing Tatum, I was going to make reference to John Cena. I always just wrote him off as a guy who looked like John Cena. I love Amy Schumer. I think she is fantastic and super funny. And okay, we'll see. I'm excited.
Yeah, that's where they're headed.
Maybe it'll be good for him to get away from his own writing.
Oh. Yeah, maybe that's what it needs to be. Because I think that, I think also the problem with This Is 40 was people went into it expecting a comedy, right? And it is sort of a comedy, but it's very dark. Like, it's a very dark comedy, and I don't think people were expecting. They were expecting, like, it's fun, loving, everything's okay, blah, blah. Like, no, there's problems, and you can make fun of those problems, but the problems still exist.
Yeah, it's like there's, like, 25 minutes of like, Knocked Up is, like, I'll say 80% like funny, 20% like dealing with like real problems,
right?
And like real like questions, and this happened to in a weird way. This is strange because I feel like they're inferior, but like this happened to the Farrelly brothers too. As they moved along in their movies, that kind of comedy, the serious percentage, always started to move.
Right.
So it was like, you know, like, Kingpin was darker than Dumb and Dumber, and by the time you got to like Me, Myself, and Irene, you're like, okay, this movie's pretty dark. Like, it's like 40, like it's 60-40, funny to dark.
Right.
And I feel like that's been the Apatow kind of, you know, 40-Year-Old Virgin is by far the most comedic of his movies, like, you know, top to bottom.
Right.
Knocked Up was a little less, you know, Funny People was a little less than that. And then this 40s unit, it was even less than 20 people.
I had a problem with how readily available cupcakes were in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, I get, he likes cupcakes, but just nobody keeps that many cupcakes around.
Well, it's a very Los Angeles dessert.
Yeah, that's true. People love their cupcakes.
Like, there was like a time when, like, if you wanted to make like a quick $100,000, you'd just open a cupcake shop and give it a nice little, nice little punny name, and then you'd be good.
Coincidentally enough, I was just in Sacramento for my dad's birthday, and I went to my favorite taqueria, which used to have a cupcake store in that little strip mall area.
Okay.
Cupcake store is no longer there, out of business. So it's not a Sacramento delight.
Hey, pie, it's your time now.
Pie is fine, but we got to stop putting it up there with cake. Okay. I'm tired of this.
We're going to devolve into my favorite Adam Carolla argument.
Okay.
I love this, which is pie versus cake. And pie is so superior to cake.
It's just not true. Close. It's just not true.
I want to say, like, when I was 9 years old, my mother put a birthday cake in front of me, and I was like, where's my pie? Like, I don't want a birthday cake. I want a birthday pie. Like, cake is, like, all fine. It's like, cake is like a piece of toast without the jam on it. Like, there's no, the fruit flavor is what's great. And the sugar and, like, the gooiness of a pie, you can't beat it. Like, apple pie is the great American dessert.
So
you take your birthday cake. All right, you can go do whatever you want with it in Minnesota, hippie. And I'm going to eat my pie.
Listen, no one's putting a slice of cheese on to spruce up a piece of cake. They do that with apple pie. That's a different cheese. People are putting like a Kraft single.
Who puts cheese on apple pie?
It's a thing. I don't know where it's a thing. I just know I've seen it in TV.
That's disgusting.
Right, exactly. No one's putting cheese on a cake.
Except for cheesecake.
No, that's like cheese in a cake. It's different. It's a different cheese. It's not a Kraft single.
In-N-Out is not that different.
It's very different.
Okay. So you're saying you would be fine with a cheese pie.
That's it depends on the cheese. But I'm telling you, it's...
Brie.
It's, oh, my God. Oh, I would eat the hell out of a brie pie. But no, the thing is that we'll eventually get back to basketball. I think people are probably not happy with this, but I would say that there is a reason you mix up the parfait, because if you just throw stuff on top, it's completely different than if you mix it all in. That's my argument.
I mean, but that's what you get in a bite of pie. You get all the different textures.
Not if I've got cheese on top.
You don't just eat the inside out of a pie. You eat the whole thing. You get the crust on the bottom, which is a little different than the crust on the top. I don't have my mom send you a pie.
It's too soggy on the bottom. That's the thing. I love the side crust.
Crust is awesome. You get like four different crusts.
No, it's great, but the bottom crust is disgusting.
Cake is so one note.
No, you're just having the wrong cake.
Okay, I mean, what kind of cake is, like, what would be if you were like, you were trying to convert me to cake. What would you put in front of me?
I mean, you can't go wrong with a red velvet cake.
Yeah, I don't like red velvet that much. I think it's too rich.
I don't even want to talk to you anymore.
Yeah, I mean, like, here, like, so, do you know what's a good cake? Pancakes.
That's not a cake.
Crab cakes. cake isn't even the best kind of cake.
Crab cakes are not good. We've got to stop that too.
Getting that cake.
Crab cakes are the potato salad of appetizers. Potato salad, not good. Crab cakes, not good.
Your palate's horrible.
Let me ask you something about... My palate's amazing. Let me ask you something that's a little less frustrating. What was it like being swarmed for coverage? Like, you became kind of one of the guys, right?
Yeah, it was weird.
It's got to be exhausting.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, like, here, like, you know, fun to the extent it's like everybody wants to have their what they do noticed and paid attention to.
Right.
And that element was great. It was overwhelming, though, knowing that there were so many people who were in on the story. And it made, honestly, in a lot of ways, it made it harder to to do your job the way you wanted to, because, you know, you might only get one question before Access Hollywood is asking something, or Inside Edition,
right,
or TMZ, or who, CNN, or Al Jazeera America. Like, I mean, it was everybody. And it was overwhelming. Like, last night, you know, it was funny. I'm going to name drop here for a second.
Who?
So, actually, I don't want to name. Let's just say I was talking to a sports reporter whose name rhymes with Smil Flashkey.
Okay.
And we were talking about it, and it was like, you know, to step back from everything, all of that stuff had set the stage for what could have been, like, what was going to probably be a pretty cool night.
Yeah.
In terms of everything was set up for it to be like this weird kind of group catharsis.
Right.
And, you know, Jamal Crawford and J.J. Redick talked about how when they came out of the court, kind of the goosebumps and stuff. You know, I'm never out there when the team runs out on the court. But after what happened, you know, in game four, made sure that I was at my seat early and stuff. And the way that, you know, everybody was in their seats, you know, 20 minutes before the game, which in L.A. never happens, like, ever. They're lucky if people are there by halftime. And you know, it was so loud for them. And you know, Chris Paul said it almost brought him to tears.
Yeah.
Know, like that, they just felt so much support, and you know, it mattered. Now, I thought one of the funny things that came out of this was sort of the backhanded compliment, which is like stuff Dawson saying, like, I wish it was like that for everything. Oh, it's like, thanks for having our back. Like, it shouldn't have taken this, but we appreciate it.
It's probably not going to, but could you see it at least that way for the rest of the playoffs?
I think there's going to be elements of it that, you know, the story, as they, you know, as they keep winning, the story's going to die down. I feel like it's, you know, just based on kind of the, again, like the level of, like, interest in me right now. It's gone down significantly today versus yesterday. And I feel like the story's going to die a little bit, to the extent where, okay, it's going to go from being like this big, big giant thing until Donald Sterling makes a comment. And then it'll get big again, especially if he's going to fight. Then it gets big again.
Yeah.
But, you know, as of right now, you know, they're in a series. The media in the Bay Area, you know, already had a chance at them when they were up there for game four over the weekend. They might, you know, it'll still be crowded. But I don't think it'll be one of those like 300 media nights.
Right.
You know, I think that the interest is going to slowly start to fade away a little bit. And then it'll probably, you know, if they keep advancing, it'll pick back up. You know, the deeper, that was one of the things I had a conversation with somebody last night about it. And they mentioned this, you know, is that, you know, all the attention and stuff like that, it's a distraction. There's no question it's a distraction. It takes you out of your routines and stuff like that. But, you know, if you get to the finals, that's a lot of it, that's what it's like.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, if they get there, this is tremendous prep work in terms of being able to focus and stuff like that.
This is a training camp for focus.
Yeah, like, if you can make it through this, you know, and somehow, you know, stay remotely locked in, it's an accomplishment. You know, one of the things Redick said to me yesterday after the game, I asked him just kind of about just the level of how mentally exhausting this has been for them. He said what's crazy, he used the word mind-blowing, is that, you know, they went 4 days without really giving the Golden State Warriors their full attention. Because they couldn't. It was impossible.
Right, yeah, that's crazy.
You know what I mean? And like, he's like, the Warriors are so good, and they're way too good to do that. And you can't do that. And it's just, you know, I think right now they're going to be they get to go today up to Oakland and or San Francisco, and they stay in San Francisco. They get to go up there, and they'll be, I think, closer to having full attention on the Warriors, which for them is like just, it's just got to be so freeing. To not worry about other stuff. To not worry about, are they doing the right thing by playing for an owner who thinks of them, you know, clearly within different parameters as he thinks of other people.
Hey, do you want to talk about something a little more basketball related for a couple minutes before we go?
Yeah, Yeah, let's do it.
Jamal Crawford won Sixth Man of the Year.
Yeah, how about that?
People are upset. I would have voted for Taj Gibson as my first choice, but Jamal was certainly my second choice. I have no problem with Jamal winning it. The internet's kind of freaking out a little bit about it.
Oh,
because
wait a minute. You say basketball internet is overreacting to something?
It's a shocking development. It's as shocking development as anything we've seen in the last week. Oh. But yeah, they're upset. But I mean, I kind of feel like, and you're much closer to the situation, so maybe you can articulate.
And I voted for Jamal Crawford.
Yeah, and you can articulate it better. You had a vote. You voted for Jamal Crawford. People don't really realize how much better Jamal was this year, right?
He played the best basketball of his career this year.
Yeah.
All around, which is crazy because he's 34 years old. that's weird. I mean, he looks like he's like 19. But, you know, the way that he became a credible team defender, the way that when Chris Paul went out, he was averaging 24 points a game. I mean, he was, you know, playing at all-star level during that stretch. The way that he became kind of a playmaker. And here's the thing. Like, I saw, I think it was Matt Moore. You know him.
Yes, I've heard of him.
He was talking about field goal percentage in reference to the last two winners. And it's like that. I think that's the worst possible stat to judge Jamal Crawford on, because the shots that he's asked to take, like, they should count for more in some ways. in terms of the stuff that he's willing to throw up towards the basket. And you would say, well, you know, a better player wouldn't do that. Well, it's like, no, I mean, a worse player couldn't do that.
Right.
You know, he's 100% asked when he's on the court to just, like, go score. And he did that, obviously. I mean, he had a terrific year. But then he also became a spot-up shooter for them, which isn't him. That's not, I mean, you don't think of him as like one of the great knockdown corner three guys.
Right.
But he became that in their offense. He became a guy who he was just so important to them. And Taj Gibson's so important to the Bulls.
Yeah.
And that's who I voted for second. And, you know, and it's funny, both of their arguments in terms of, you know, the big Taj Gibson argument in a lot of ways was, well, he leads the NBA in fourth quarter minutes. Meaning that, you know, that's how much Tibbs values him.
Yeah, but that also has to deal with how little he values Carlos Boozer.
Sure, you know, whatever. you and your well-rounded article. but, like, one of the things about Jamal Crawford, he's one of the best fourth-quarter scorers in the NBA.
Right.
Like, he's on par with LeBron and like, Durant and stuff like that. And, you know, what's crazy is that he, when you watch them play, as much as I've watched him play this year, I don't think of him as the guy that they kind of roll the ball to in the fourth quarter either. It's what he does is that those 4 or 5 minutes when Blake and Chris are getting rest early in the fourth quarter, it's just like, just go get it. And, you know, they just hand him the ball a lot of times, and he has to create that. They don't have the offense. You know, this wasn't a team that had, I mean, Darren Collison had a great year, and had Jamal Crawford not been on the Clippers, he's somebody I would have considered. He had a great year for the Clippers. I don't think I would have voted for him, but I would have given him consideration. But when I look at Jamal Crawford, I just don't know who's better at that job in the NBA. And to me, it was him, and it wasn't actually even that close for me.
Yeah, and I think that, all right, if you want to make the field goal percentage argument, shouldn't it be relative? I mean, Taj Gibson's field goal percentage was 47.9%. Which for a big man that primarily should be playing around the basket and takes, you know, I know he takes a lot of mid-range jumpers, but that doesn't mean that's a good shot for him. Just like the Jamal Crawford stuff that people are criticizing for him putting up aren't necessarily good shots, right? So I think there's a relativity.
I haven't been on the internet. What's been like what's the argument against Jamal Crawford?
I honestly don't even know that there is one. It's just that I think he has a reputation, right? And it's okay. he's not a defender. Well, Taj Gibson isn't really an offensive player. You know, like yeah. I think that there's a, okay, do you value defense more? Do you value scoring more? Well, I get it if you value defense more, but don't devalue the scoring. That's my problem with it, is that you devalue what Jamal Crawford did when that's not the point of the award. It's saying who had the biggest value, and it has nothing to do with what you know, with the process of devaluing the other guy, it's why is this guy it, not why is this guy not it? Like, that's, to me, that's what the argument always should be.
And I mean, here, Jamal's never going to be Tony Allen. I mean, you know, it's just not him at all. But he's like the Tony Allen of offense.
Right.
You know, in a lot of ways. And then I think kind of his contributions to defense are, you know, are on par to sort of Tony Allen's contributions to offense in a lot of ways. But maybe even like this year, he was just better. He was in the right spot a lot of times. You know, he kind of started to use his length to create, you know, turnovers and get into passing lanes. And you could tell he played with a greater effort defensively, a greater intensity. And I don't know. There weren't as many times when you watch him and you were like, you know, oh, Jamal Crawford's in attack him. You know?
Right.
Like, that's not... Now, the Warriors are doing a little bit, but they're going at him with Andre Iguodala or you know, somebody like somebody really, really competent. But, like, most teams, like, they don't have, like, when he's playing with the second unit and stuff, they don't have a guy who can do that. I think he's been, honestly, it blows my mind that at his age, he became a better all-around player.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, in my mind, it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
So that's why I voted for him.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. And I have no problem with that vote. Like, I think it's a good vote. I would have gone with Taj Gibson.
Thanks, Zach.
Yeah, no problem. I would have gone with Taj Gibson number one, but I don't see it as an injustice. Like, that's crazy. That's a crazy overreaction to me. Like, to be like, yeah, oh, there is no way on this planet that could be true. Like, no, there's a lot of reasons why that could be true.
Yeah, and I mean, I think people just like being angry. No, if Taj Gibson had won it, I think. You know, a lot of people have been pretty excited, but then there would have been the people who would have been angry that Jamal didn't and thought it was an injustice. I mean, like, here, he was, you know, he was a super important piece on the team that finished with the third best record in the league, you know, that navigated, you know, horrible injuries to, you know, their starting shooting guard, to, you know, their starting point guard. Like, he was incredibly valuable to them.
Yeah.
And I think from an all-around standpoint, I think he's the best. He was the best player this season to come off the bench.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Well, yeah. I'm gonna let you get some much-needed rest, so you can.
I'm going back to bed.
So you can fresh to write about more racism tomorrow, which I know you're excited about, and we will have you on pretty soon. We read you at the Orange County Register. Follow you on Twitter at.
Extra, extra.
Follow you on Twitter at Dan Wyke Sports. Dan Wyke, thank you so much.
Thanks, Zach.